From Aspen Public Radio, this is Curated. Stories on the art and the artists who make up the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Claire Woodcock, arts and culture reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. Since learning that I'd be producing this show, I've been meditating a lot on the question, what does it mean to be a curator? I mean, I've always prided myself on having really good taste. Only half kidding, by the way. But I knew that going into this show, getting at the heart of what art is and what curators do would be super important. So about a week before launching Curated, I spoke with Patrick Fort, the show's first host. I posed the question of what he looked for while compiling content.
Finding out what it takes to put it together, whether that's money, whether that's time, whether that's some sort of social or economic investment.
Totally. That's a lot of what this show was and will continue to be, giving light to the behind-the-scenes movers and shakers that make this valley prominent in the art world. So today on the program, we'll explore different dimensions of art. A sculpture that's less abstract than it appears, inside the minds of photographers and what they see, and why it's okay not to get contemporary art. There will also be music. So thanks for tuning in, and stay with me. So the first story of today's program doesn't begin in Aspen. We'll get there, I promise. But first, we're going to go to my home state, which is New York, to a place called Liberty Island.
We're leaving, yeah!
Visiting Liberty Island in New York means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. On this day, the weather is operating on a sliding scale of overcast to showers. But the ferry is still packed with people from all over the world, excited to see this iconic symbol up close.
Just a landmark to see when you're in New York.
Your name says it's from freedom, liberty.
You have to say America is kind of a symbol of freedom.
2,000 miles away in Aspen, a piece of that symbolism is on display. In 2010, Jan Vo, a conceptual Dutch and Vietnamese artist, began constructing We the People. Vo recasts a life-size Statue of Liberty from 30 tons of copper sheets, all about the width of two pennies.
We're standing in the cafe portion of our roof deck sculpture garden looking out at Aspen Mountain, and you'll notice it's an undulating wall of copper that has a number of rivets and seams and folds.
That's Jonathan Hagman, Aspen Art Museum's installation director. He's on the third floor of the museum examining the sculpture. He says mounting, positioning, and weighting this particular piece was a challenge.
It's a really heavy base just because of the winds that we get up here. So it came in two parts, the base and the sculpture. We got the position, dropped the base, and monitor it every day. We look at it, we brush the snow off it, we make sure, you know, it's dry.
What Hagman is describing obviously doesn't sound quite like the iconic monument known worldwide. The thing is, the Aspen Art Museum only has one of the pieces, as Spencer Jackson, one of the museum's guides, explains.
This is one of 250 pieces of Jan Vo's We the People. It's his long-term project where he was reconstructing the Statue of Liberty.
But which piece is it that the art museum has? People seem to have it pretty narrowed down.
It's definitely somewhere on the robe.
I think it's a hip skirt.
Somewhere in the lower third is my only guess.
Heidi Zuckerman is CEO and director of the Aspen Art Museum. She says this piece is unique because it takes a lot of participation.
You have to use your imagination to think about other people standing in front of other aspects of this work in other places and what it might mean to them at that time as well.
Zuckerman says the museum acquired the Jan Vo piece from a private art collector based in Aspen. Although not intentional, she acknowledges that this work could be a manifest of today's zeitgeist.
I don't think we realized how sort of timely the presentation of a work of art that's really dealing with the issues of liberty and what it means to be an American would be on view at a complex time in our country's history.
Bernie Arndt works for the Aspen Skiing Company and is a regular at the art museum. He says, like many of the works in this museum, Vo's We the People is conceptual in nature.
It's poignant, maybe quaint now, but in context of our current immigration philosophies and attitudes, I think it's a good point of discussion to find out where we are and what we think about relationships to different countries in the world.
He says on second glance, the physical structure reminds him of airline debris from September 11th, 2001.
At the base of World Trade Center is the 9/11 memorial.
Anti-terrorism messages have become an integral part of the Liberty Island tour. Since 9/11, visiting the statue has become a much more controlled experience. In Aspen, Zuckerman says that over time, her view of Vo's work has changed.
Seeing it against our changing landscape, our natural landscape. And it looks different when it's sunny and when it's cloudy, when it's covered with snow, when the mountain behind it is white or when it's green. And I love the idea of having something be a point of reference, a point of visual reference that allows you to have some kind of way to mark time. Because time moves fast and slow, sometimes simultaneously. But if there's something that's fixed, and I like to use works of art as a punctuation in life. So if there's something that's fixed, it gives you just a sense of greater purpose.
This piece of Jan Vo's We the People will remain on display through June 4th. Additional reporting on this story was done by Joe Cardina in New York. You're listening to Curated on Aspen Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Last Friday, professional photographers Dick Durrance and Sue Drinker exhibited a collection of photographs they took of found objects around Carbondale with their iPhones. I visited them at their home last week, where Dick gave me a sneak peek of the prints and the double meanings that they hold.
It's not only a hat that's been run over in the street, but emerging from it is a pink cord. Inside the hat was a set of earphones. And so in seeing that picture, I not only see a hat run over in the street, but it suggests to me the sense of disconnection that occurs at different times in our lives. Or there's a shot over there of the handle for lifting the lid to a street sewer. But it looks like a couple of eyes staring out, reminding me of the fact that in shooting these pictures, I'm not only looking out at the world, but looking into myself. Or there's a picture of a piece of walnut that looks like a face looking down on, in this case, me. And what it is a representation of the guilt that remains from having done photographs for cigarette campaigns. Or there's another one that says, a splash of paint, basement floor. But it reflects the anger that probably goes all the way back to when I was a combat photographer in Vietnam. Seeing things for what they are and what else they are seems to have appeared naturally in me and in Sue, my wife, whose pictures are also in this show. One of my first National Geographic assignments, I was doing a book on the Lewis and Clark expedition, and I was in a cave where they had camped shortly after getting underway in Charleston, Missouri. And I was photographing in the cave, and I looked up, and here was this incredible face staring at me out of that rock wall. And it took me aback, and I had no idea what it was. I truly had no idea what it was. Many years later, I was in Maine, living in Rockport, Maine, where the Maine Photographic Workshop is located. And I met Paul Caponegro, a landscape photographer, and he was introducing to us this idea of things for what they are and what else they are. And it's a concept that he had gotten from a fellow named Minor White. And then I began to think, okay, well, maybe then now I'm beginning to see images can be metaphors for other thoughts. And then after working for a number of years in advertising, finding myself doing cigarette campaign after cigarette campaign after cigarette campaign, assignments that were a hell of a lot of fun. And of course, they paid extremely well. And I was having a blast. But I knew I shouldn't be doing this. I was using my gifts in a way that ran contrary to my values. And I knew it wasn't right. But man, it was so much fun. And it paid so well. It was, hell, let's face it, it's as hard to cut yourself off from those day rates as it is to cut yourself off from nicotine. And one day I was photographing a couple in a field of blue bonnets. And it was a cigarette campaign. And then after the shoot, I went into a cave. And there, staring down at me from the ceiling, was this huge, dark face. My conscience come to haunt me. And I realized, okay, you know you shouldn't be doing this. Stop it. And so I quit. It was so clearly a dark, looming figure up there. and this white little figure here cowering in the corner. Me, conscience, it's clear.
I love the money. I smoked for 12 years. For me, it wasn't as much of an issue as it was for Dick. When you take a picture, capture an image, you blend all of the things that are a part of your life and a part of your vision and a part of your creative self. And that blending is using the camera as a tool. And when you use the camera as an artistic tool, as your paintbrush, so to speak, you come out with something that is very personal and very unique, just as a painter would do that or as a sculptor would do that. Looking at art is just like trying to make art. Looking at art is an art. And I think if you feel a connection to something, you'll stay with it long enough to find your own path through it or to it. And if it doesn't have a connection for you, you'll move on. There's no way everyone can look at every piece of art and have a connection with it. So I think the most important thing is to recognize that you have a connection, that you pass by five or six images on the wall and then one makes you stop and look. So that's the one that is trying to speak to you and that you will find a path toward and around and through that has everything to do with who you are and what your experience in life is. And I think that's true whether it's a photograph or a Picasso. You know, it's the same for everything. It's about you and the connection.
But anyway, so when I was doing the National Geographic stuff and photographing combat in Vietnam, I was helping people. I was looking at the world through the lens of a camera, helping people understand the world that was going on around us. I was communicating understanding. In shooting the advertising, I was creating fantasies. And it's not an equal value. It really isn't. And particularly if it's a fantasy that's encouraging people to do something that's harmful to them. And so I finally had to stop. But in Vietnam, I have a picture of a USAID decal, which the logo is two hands clasping, signifying friendship. And it was pasted on the side of a Jeep next to the fuel tank, which was padlocked. That's signifying friendship, and they signify friendship with a padlock. And then there was another picture I photographed, a guy sitting next to his 155 howitzer artillery piece. And he's sitting next to it, and there's the huge shells that they fired sitting next to him, ready to be put in. And he's reading a letter from home, from his family, from the people he loves, standing by to fire a missile of death over the hill into somebody's home on the other side of the hill. I think when we look at pictures, and this is true of all thought, really, but certainly of all photographs and artwork, is that we bring to each of those images our experience. And the viewer sees it through the lens of their experience and take away what resonates from them, which may have nothing to do with what was in my mind. You just can't separate the observer from the observed, as Werner Herzog expressed in terms of physics. And of course, it would appall the heck out of him to have some artist using his concept, but it really does apply.
When we were doing the national parks together, the National Geographic secret to knowing where to go to take a picture in a place you've never been is to go to the local drugstore, because there's always postcards there with whatever is photographable in the area. So we would go pick up the postcard, figure out where we're going to go, and our agreement was when we got there, the first person to get to the right spot, and I'm quoting that, the right spot, got to have that spot, and the other guy had to go figure out another way to shoot it. And about 90% of the time, the guy who went to find the other way to shoot it ended up with a better picture. So it's that exercise of going to where it's obviously a picture and then going somewhere else and figuring out a better way to take the picture that really gets you the best spot. And that's when we photograph, that's what we both do. You first photograph it as it seems obvious, and then you look for another perspective that's more interesting. If people look at our work and say, wow, that was in the street, that was on the sidewalk, that was a chair, that all those things are right around me, and are available to me if I would just stop and look a little closer and look a little more carefully. So I hope when they walk out, they look left and right and begin to see more than they saw when they walked in.
That was Dick Durrance and Sue Drinker. Their exhibition Within and Without, A Unique Look at Carbondale, is on display at the R2 Gallery in the launch pad through May 26th. For more information, visit carbondalearts.com. Coming up on Curated, the Aspen Art Museum's CEO and director Heidi Zuckerman explains why it's not always necessary to get contemporary art. But first, British musician, producer, and DJ Simon Green, stage name Bonobo, will play Belly Up Aspen on Thursday. Here's his remix of the Gorillaz single Andromeda.
When the boss looks to laugh, take it in your heart. Now, lover.
That was Bonobo's remix of the new Gorillaz track, Andromeda. The English DJ plays the Belly Up Thursday with French DJ Fakir. For more information, visit bellyupaspen.com. This month, the Aspen Art Museum presents a short series on humor and absurdity in contemporary art. We heard from the museum's director, Heidi Zuckerman, in the first act of our show. Now she joins me in the studio to confront the phrase, "I don't get it," a line she hears a lot at the museum. So, do you have a standard explanation for that, a go-to, when someone's at your museum and they go, "I don't get it"?
I think it's kind of a downfall of our contemporary time that people want to understand everything. I actually like the idea that there are things that we can't know. And one of the things I love about art is that it opens up the possibility of celebrating the unknown and the unknowable. So when someone says, "I don't get it," if they say it with a curiosity, then it's an opening to have a conversation. And I think there are a lot of things that I don't get too. And I'd like to be in that place that's sometimes a little bit uncomfortable, because I think it's in those moments where you allow yourself to relax into that discomfort that real opportunities for learning and transcendence can occur.
Okay, that's really interesting, because the approach that you're taking is very exploratory.
Exactly. So, sure, I mean, there are always going to be people who are dismissive of art, and I think that is a missed opportunity. I am a curious person. I like to understand why people do things, and I like to try and approach life and art in the same way, which is without judgment. So the idea behind the short course, the I Don't Get It program, is to allow people the opportunity to say, "You know what? I don't get it. I might think it's weird. I might think it's strange. I might think my kid could do that. But, you know, prove me wrong. Tell me something I don't know."
Mm-hmm. And you're using this approach of humor.
Correct.
To propel it forward. Can you tell me a little bit about what you hope to achieve with that?
Sure. So I like things that are funny. I like people that are funny. I like artwork that's funny. And I think humor is a great entry point to works of art. And we try and have a sense of humor at the museum as well. And I think you find that in our exhibitions sometimes too. This idea that if something kind of catches you off guard, surprises you, that's why humor is so great, because you laugh often unexpectedly. And in that moment where you do something, feel something, think something that you didn't expect to, then again, that's where the opportunities arise.
So it's okay to go to the Aspen Art Museum, see something that you think is funny, and to laugh out loud.
Oh, please. Absolutely.
Is there anything that you really need to know to understand contemporary art, to have like the vocabulary or what have you?
I think it's like anything. The more time you spend with it, the more time you spend thinking about it, looking at it, reading about it, speaking about it, the more confidence you have. But there is no baseline from which to start. And even if you don't think about it, read about it, speak about it, etc., you can still enjoy it. And works of art have a presence. And just being in their presence, feeling their energy, feeling their aura, I think makes people better. And I think it makes the world better. So people can come without any knowledge, any expectation, and have, I think, a formative experience.
Mm-hmm. But how do you explain contemporary art at the museum to patrons?
We explain contemporary art at the museum to our visitors in a variety of different ways. I use sort of a baseline idea to explain to people, you know, what art is, right? So my definition of art is that if the person who made it intended it to be a work of art, then it's art, period. So if it was originally made for a utilitarian purpose, for example, then it doesn't matter if over time it's collected and put in the museum and presented as, you know, something worthy of that exhibition. It's interesting and relevant and important, but it's not art, because that's not how it was originally conceived. So it doesn't matter what form the work of art takes. It can be an idea. It can be a sculpture. It can be a little bit of wind, for example, in this great Ryan Gander piece that he had done at Documenta 5 years ago. It can take any form, but if the artist intends the gesture or the object to be art than it is. And so I use that as a baseline. And then once we agree on that, or you accept that, you don't have to agree, but once you accept that, then you can make a value judgment. Do I like it? Do I think it's good? Am I interested in it? But you can't really argue about whether it's art or not, because it just is, because the person who made it said it is.
Okay, so the person says that something is art and someone doesn't like it and they try to argue that it's not art.
That's not a good argument.
No, it would just get shut down.
Well, because it is art, but they can argue the first part of that argument, which is that they don't like it. And that's okay. You know, I think that's what makes life interesting, is that some people like chocolate and some people like vanilla. Some people like the mountains and other people like the beach. And it's not that one is better than the other. It's just personal preference.
Yeah. And I'm sure that there are pieces of art that you don't necessarily like either.
Correct.
Yeah.
And sometimes I show things at the museum that I don't necessarily like, but I think they're important to be seen. One of the things that's exciting about art is that it's unpredictable and it's often responsive. So just like we don't know what's going to happen with the future of technology or medicine or human behavior or food, we don't know what's going to happen with art as well, but I guarantee you that art will be at the forefront of the evolution of the way we understand ourselves in the world.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Heidi.
Thanks for having me.
That was Heidi Zuckerman, the Aspen Art Museum's Nancy and Bob Magoon, CEO and director. To learn more about the museum's lectures on humor and absurdity in contemporary art, visit aspenartmuseum.org. And be sure to check out The Dial, APR's newest podcast from Kristen Kay. It'll feature interviews with our reporters explaining what you need to know about the complex stories in and around the Valley. You can find that on our website. This Week in the Arts. English musician, producer, and DJ Bonobo plays the Belly Up Thursday with French DJ Fakir. That show starts at 9:30 p.m. Thunder River Theater Company presents Consensual Improv. Friday night, local actors bring clever improvisations to the Black Box for new games and another round of giggles. That show begins at 8 p.m. sharp. The Glenwood Center for the Arts celebrates 25 years of dancers dancing this weekend, with performances at the Glenwood Springs High School at 7 p.m. Friday and 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Saturday. Theater Aspen presents the 4th Annual Pop Spring Cabaret at 7 p.m. on Friday, with Theater Aspen's Education Director Graham Northrup and Broadway Musical Director Jonathan Gorst. Local teens tell the teen experience through harmonies, pop vocal stylings, hip-hop dance, and more. Saturday is Dandelion Day, all day at Soper's Park in Carbondale. The annual festival celebrates sustainability, community, and springtime with activities and food that are worth celebrating. Find the festival page on Facebook for updates. Over at the Launchpad, Dance Initiative is welcoming New York dance artist Melissa Toogood. She'll be here to give a workshop and informal studio presentation in Carbondale. It starts at 3 p.m. And Saturday night, Nashville Americana Stringers' Old Crow Medicine Show plays Belly Up Aspen. That's all that's curated for this week. For more on arts and culture, visit us at aspenpublicradio.org or tune into Morning Edition throughout the week from 6 to 9 a.m. I'm Claire Woodcock at the Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk. Today's show is produced by myself, with help from our producer Kristen Kay and additional reporting from Joe Cardina in New York. Edited by News Director Carolyn Zachariasen. Special thanks to the Stefan Edlis and Gail Neeson Foundation, which aims to support the arts, community, and outreach. Our theme music was composed by Jason Patton and Greg Lout in Boulder. Curated is a production of Aspen Public Radio News. You're listening to Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting on KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale. Your news, your music, your station.